Welcome, welcome to the Gift of Gaming podcast, your one-stop shop for loads of things video games. This week, we're reeling in the news from January. GTA 6 is set to bank billions in its first year after launch. EA is certainly not making that kind of money, and the Video Game History Foundation has a digital library we can all cheer about. It's all here on the Gift of Gaming podcast. What's up, everybody? It's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by the news team extraordinaire, the artist formerly known as Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself, Luke Maycock. Luke, how are you?
What's up? Doing well, Darren. Thank you.
And the console-hating, PC-playing, lore-seeking, full-time Canadian himself, Chris Robbins.
What's going on?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing all right. A little tired.
Yeah.
I got enough sleep, but I'm just still wrecked.
I mean, I kind of had an alarm, like, because I needed to log on to work for a little bit this morning. So, like, I had an alarm on, so about, like, 9:30 to wake up. But I've slept through the whole night, great sleep, woke up, I'm still... We just had too much fun last night, that's what it was, playing video games.
Probably just shitty sleep from, like, staring at the screen for so long, and I don't know.
Is there something that's damaging about that? Did no one tell me?
I think it fucks up your brain, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No one told me about this.
Staring at your phone before you go to bed. You're not supposed to do that. Yeah.
It's like the type of light that like screens and stuff give off is like similar enough to sunlight that kind of makes your brain think that you're not supposed to be sleeping.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
I think so.
Yeah.
Do some pseudoscience, some bro pseudoscience.
If you know the answer, please email at us.
gamepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, Chris. I can always rely on you for those little plugs, you know. So this is a news episode. This is our first news episode of 2025. January was a relatively quiet news month.
Oh, thank God we're only covering video game news because it definitely wasn't a quiet month.
Yeah, that was... in Ireland, it was a quiet, month all around. Before we kick into that, you guys, I know we were kind of having our little quarterly meeting last night where we played some video games, come up with some episode ideas. Luke, I think Chris asked you just before we kind of turned on the mics, but what was your party games? You were playing lots of multiplayer games. Did you have a favorite?
Yeah, last night we played a few. I really dug Ultimate Chicken Horse. That was an interesting one.
Your first time playing it, right?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think I said it previously, but I'd seen it a lot before, but just had no idea what was going on the screen. So playing it was fun. There's a lot of mechanics where you can kind of like sabotage everybody if you have a bit of a lead to kind of just sack the game. Yeah,
you were playing it pretty smart, you know.
And I won most of the time, you know.
It's pretty ingenious.
It was fun.
Chris, what about you? You played them probably more than the rest of us, as Steam Deck we all used.
Yeah, it's a tough call because there's a lot of bangers on there, but there was 5 of us in total last night, and only one of the games, which Runbow is one of my favorites, it was the only one that could handle 4 players, which seems kind of shitty. I know that's kind of like the standard in local, but it's 4. There's no reason you can't have like 12 people playing speedrunners.
Mount Your Friends. That was also...
Mount Your Friends. I forgot about that.
Fucking hell. That was
probably my favorite
that
one,
was,
actually.
Yeah. I mean, that was the hardest I'd laughed at a video game in a long time. Like, so the premise of that is like you control all 4 limbs with each of the X, square, triangle, circle buttons on your controller to climb up all of the bodies that came before you to see who can get to the tallest part. It was so funny, man. It was a great game to start off with. I loved it. It's been a long time since I played it, but speedrunners. I'm a devil for speedrunners.
Yeah, Speedrunners is super good. We had fun last night because we all were kind of
rusty
on the same level.
Yeah.
But the moment you start playing someone who like plays speedrunners a lot, it just becomes boring because you can't compete with them. They know all the grapples. They just,
I still have the music stuck in my head. It's such a good soundtrack.
Yeah, it's especially when it
isn't there only one song?
Is that the only song?
There's 2 songs in it. There's one which is kind of like this one that's playing normally when you're all running, but the moment one person gets knocked out, it jumps into that upbeat, we're all in trouble kind of music. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. And I used to play that loads when it first came out. Our mate Andy Garland over in New Zealand would have been a massive speedrunners fan at the time. So it was a long time since I played it and I really enjoyed it. But it was good. Yeah, it was good fun. Played loads of games last night. Crawl, which was a crawl.
You guys are bad. But every time we get a chance like that many people, I'm really trying to push that game because I think it's slept on a bit.
In terms of it doesn't get the kind of...
Yeah, you don't hear people like ever playing it.
It's an interesting concept. I just feel like none of the monsters that you turn into in Crawl when you're playing as the ghosts or whatever should be as shit as the fish. I had a really hard time when I got, you know, when I spawned as the fish, because it's so useless, or the blowfish, whatever it is.
It was also, I found there's a learning curve in trying to figure out like what half the monsters even did with their two attacks, where it was like, how do I play this?
But you only, like, in terms of if you're trying to fight the hero, you have got like 4 seconds to figure out how to fight, or else you're fucked.
And
like,
then you don't get to play as that monster again for ages.
Yeah. So it's, and you don't really get powerful until you get like that peak monster, and then
But it was good. It was a fun night. Were there any in particular that stood out to you, Dan?
Sorry?
Were there any in particular that stood out to you? What was your fave?
Oh, I mean, speedrunners I'd always love, but I mean, I've been sitting on that one for a while. But in terms of ones I wouldn't be familiar with, Runbow is a nice, simple concept that's executed quite well in terms of the color palettes and the level changing. But I'm always a devil for a good platformer.
The first time I played Runbow.
Runbow.
Runbow was the on Canadian the version. Wii U. and there was one mode. It was like Game Master mode or God mode or whatever. So whoever had the Wii U tablet could like build the platforms.
As they were running.
Yeah, you could just place. It was really cool. It was like Mario Maker while you're competing.
While you're playing. I like that idea a lot, actually. Yeah.
That was a thing. That was one of the Mario games did do that as well, didn't
they? Oh, did they?
Yeah, that was one of the Mario games on Wii U. You could make blocks to block the players from finishing levels and stuff like that, or knock them into lava.
God, the Wii U would almost
ripped off of that then.
Yeah. Wii U was almost something that was good. Almost.
Yeah, Nintendo nearly gets there a lot of the time.
Speaking of Nintendo and news, we've got a lot to talk about. We'll get to it later on in our show, but of course the Switch 2 was announced in January. I'll get your thoughts on that, so you know, get your thoughts ready on Switch 2 in the background. But our first story of today is GTA 6 is projected to make over $3 billion in its first year on sale. This is coming from Wesley Yin Poole at IGN.
I mean, I guess, but like, okay, I guess this will explain where
the money's coming
those
from.
Estimates are coming from.
Yeah, we'll find out. I'm sure I QC'd the articles I'm about to read. I know, Wesley Yin Poole is always a reliable individual. So Grand Theft Auto 6 is projected to make an eye-watering $3 billion in its first year on sale. Rockstar's hotly anticipated open-world crime caper is currently due out fall 2025 on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S, with no word on a PC release for now. A new report by the Financial Times, based on analysis by video game research group DFC Intelligence, predicts GTA 6 will exceed $1 billion in pre-orders before it even launches. Surprising no one, GTA 6 is expected to be the biggest entertainment launch of 2025, ahead of any movie or competing video game. DFC predicted total revenue from GTA 6's first 12 months on sale will reach $3.2 billion. To put that into context, 2024's highest grossing movie, Inside Out 2, made just shy of $1.7 billion at the global box office.
Inside Out 2.
I know, right here.
Rough year for movies.
Yeah, it was a quiet year for movies. In 2013, it took Grand Theft Auto 5 just 3 days to surpass $1 billion in sales, the fastest to that figure in entertainment history. Strauss Zelnick, boss of Rockstar parent company Take-Two, told the Financial Times, quote, "I never claim victory before it occurs. That said, I think Rockstar Games will once again deliver something absolutely phenomenal. Certainly the anticipation is high," end quote. The huge projected revenue of GTA 6 is up against similarly huge development costs. When the Financial Times estimates from the high hundreds of millions to as much as $2 billion to make. There's a lot riding on GTA 6 then, but not just for Take-Two and Rockstar. In March last year, Circana analyst Matt Piscatella predicted Rockstar's surefire hit would spark renewed interest in video games, before going one step further, quote, "There's probably never been a more important thing to ever release in the industry, so no pressure," end quote. GTA 6 is the kind of game that will sell consoles. Sony's PS5 Pro will no doubt benefit greatly from interest in GTA 6 too. Let's remember, GTA 6 is not coming out on PC at launch. To play, you must own a PlayStation or an Xbox. Beyond that point of sale, GTA 6 is GTA Online equivalent will surely come packed with microtransactions as the current GTA Online does. Microsoft and Sony will get their cut of any money spent there too. As the Financial Times points out, the most guaranteed success of GTA 6 comes amid one of the toughest periods for the video game industry in recent memory. More than 33,000 people have lost their jobs since 2022, with huge layoffs at the likes of Microsoft and Sony. Indeed, Take-Two itself has suffered layoffs and studio closures. All eyes are on Rockstar for a firm GTA 6 release date, or as some predicting, a delay into 2026. Gentlemen, is GTA 6 that important?
I think it's pretty important. I get where they're coming
Grand
from.
Grand Theft Auto in general, I think, is just too big to fail.
Yeah, never said that. I think it is it's sort of, even when GTA 5 came out and did as well as it did in its first year, I remember at the time being quite excited about that, being like, surely people will start to take video games more seriously now when they see what a money behemoth it is and how much revenue it generates. Mm-hmm. And GTA 5 has proven like a lifetime success with the GTA Online stuff. Like, I still get ads for their latest GTA Online update.
Heist or whatever.
Whatever it is. Yeah, I don't know what it actually is. I don't pay attention to the ads. But yeah, I think it's super important. And if it prints money, I think that could be great for the industry.
So just
it's crazy to think that they're planning on tripling what GTA 5 brought in, though. Mm. Like, where did they get that number from?
Well, I'm assuming, in terms of expectation-wise, I would say we haven't had a Grand Theft Auto game now in 12 years. So there's people who are sitting on that, just been waiting for a huge chunk of their life for the next GTA game. GTA 5 Online was, I think, the biggest moneymaker of anything in a video game series in history. I think
maybe
it makes them
on par with FIFA Online stuff, but yeah, it's definitely.
I think it's one of the biggest moneymakers ever. I think that's the only reason they were able to put $2 billion potentially into making GTA 6, because of the amount of money online was making them. And I guess 2013 compared to now, the way we play games online has changed drastically. It's kind of the only way we play games in theory now as well. So I'd say there's a huge group of people just waiting to get in on that.
And did they say they're planning on making that on release?
I've heard nothing about it. People are expecting that to be there on release.
Because if it's only releasing on Xbox and PlayStation, I don't think there's even enough consoles to make, like, wouldn't that take everyone actually owning the console already? Like,
to make that kind of money?
Isn't there only like 60 million PS5s out there?
So the theory with this one is that GTA 6 would be the first game to release a standard edition of a game with a cost of €100 or $100 as the base price of a game.
Jeez. Given the get fucked.
That's where the three times budget chance is coming from.
So that's where I think the market is going to be released. And like, this is where I get worried about GTA 6, is everyone's really excited for it, but part of me worries that it could change the industry drastically, in that lots of industries are, or lots of game companies are struggling with development costs, etc., but no one has increased the price because they'd be outraged, of course, unless it's a GTA 6. Like, I've read a lot of comments. I can't remember what article it was that was talking about this, but loads of the comments were like, if there was ever a game I'd spend €100 on the base game, it's GTA 6. So it's the only one that can get away with it. And I think once that starts, the floodgates open. I think you get more game developers upping the price suddenly of your standard base game. So that's the only part that worries me about it, is that it's such a behemoth that people will pay that money, and it might set a new standard for expensive gaming.
I think it'll sell less at a price point like that. Yeah. Especially if you're trying to be the first, there's going to be so much pushback, man.
I would say that about any other game other than GTA 6.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think GTA 6 has just ridiculous amounts of clout behind it. There are a couple of things that could come out to scupper that, or scupper the image. One being that, GTA Online for GTA 5 didn't come out properly until like a year, 2 years after.
Yeah. It wasn't available day one with the actual game.
And GTA Online is like such a huge part of the selling point of GTA 5 now. It became such a huge selling points.
Yeah, I don't think, and that's another thing, like GTA 6 has to launch with online. I don't think people buy it for the fucking story mode. All the people that are still playing GTA 5?
They're not playing it for the story mode. Yeah, no, they're all playing it for online. So yeah,
RP servers and stuff like that.
I think if they were to come out with €100 price point or whatever for the game on release, I think it has to come with the online.
€100 is crazy, because that means it's going to be close to like 200 CAD. Like, nobody's going to pay that, man.
I see. This is the thing. I would agree with you if it was any game other than Grand Theft Auto. I think people will still pay that money for Grand Theft Auto.
And then you also have the obstacle that you run into if it comes out and it has GTA Online. That's the first large-scale stress test they'll be doing of their online game. There's going to be so many problems.
Yeah,
and it's going to be so easy for people to shit on the game and like say that point at it and say it's not worth £100 if it ships with online. So it's dodgy. I don't think they should. I think they should stick to an $80 price point, maybe, but like not $100.
Yeah, throw some fucking fancy cars you can buy in there.
Couple of books already included in your microtransaction bullshit. You'll have to do it online. I hope so. Like, it's one of those things where I hope they're good to the consumer, in that like if they are charging extra, that there's value in that. Do you know what I mean? That they're not just doing it because it's GTA 6, that they're doing it because, hey, there's loads of extra bits and pieces that you get from day one. But again, if it's been in development for X amount of years and it's cost them $2 billion to make, and like I said, what's your man? Matt Piscatella from Circana Analyst said, there's probably never been a more important thing to ever release in the industry, so no pressure. I'm like, I don't know if I 100% agree with that, but with how long people have been waiting on it, I can see it being like a huge thing for pulling people back to video games.
Another point is, I don't know that people have been like waiting for GTA 6. Like,
I think people are like, yeah, I don't think anyone's really sweating about it right now because I think they're pretty happy with GTA 5.
Yeah, so. I think the market isn't, they don't necessarily need a new game. I'd say there'll be a lot of people who'd be hype about it. Like, it's for sure, there's a blindness I have of just not knowing a lot of people who play GTA 5. So maybe there must be.
We're all kind of out of the loop with the GTA, I think. I played it for the story mode. That was it. I never did online.
Yeah, it was GTA. Yeah, and the story mode in GTA 5 is class. I just want the story mode to be good in GTA 6. That's all I want.
Yeah, I'm not interested in the online shenanigans, but I'll have to see what price it comes out of, but interesting. My next question is that there talks about it being delayed to 2026. Do you think GTA 6 arrives in fall 2025?
I mean, I haven't seen any gameplay or anything about it. No idea what state it is. I would bet 2026.
Yeah. I think if there's any risk of them having to do any sort of like unreasonable crunch to get out in 2025 from a PR perspective, they'll wait to 2026 because Rockstar has a bad track record with crunch. So I'd say they probably don't want to get married in that controversy.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, fellas. That's our first news episode bit thing done. On to number two.
Words.
I'm really trying today. Yeah. Our next one is Sony announces Helldivers and Horizon Zero Dawn movies. This is coming from Ethan Gack at Kotaku.com. Ghost of Tsushima is also getting an anime spin-off. So Sony has big Hollywood plans for its hit gaming franchises. The PlayStation 5 maker announced a series of new movie spin-offs at CES 2025 this week, including movie versions of Helldivers 2 and Horizon Zero Dawn.
It's called Starship Troopers.
What else can you do? I think this article gets into that as well. As well as an anime spin-off for Ghost of Tsushima. Horizon Zero Dawn, a game about fighting giant robotic monsters that have taken over Earth, will be brought to the big screen through a partnership between PlayStation Productions and Columbia Pictures. Sony announced on stage at its CES press conference on Monday. This is early January, by the way. The Helldivers adaptation, meanwhile, will be made by Sony Pictures. Neither has a projected release date yet, which makes sense, at least in Helldivers' case. No one expected it to be such a big hit just a year ago. Of course, Helldivers 2, a militaristic parody of a futuristic fascist empire fighting off alien invaders, is sort of already a movie. It's called Starship Troopers, the Paul Verhoeven action comedy based on the sci-fi novel by Robert Heinlein. Then again, this wouldn't be the first time Sony made a movie from a game that's loosely inspired by another movie. That is, after all, effectively what the Uncharted adaptation was, which starred Tom Holland as Indiana Jones-esque treasure hunter Nathan Drake. Sony also revealed that Ghost of Tsushima will be getting an anime series called Legends. It's being made for the streaming service Crunchyroll by Aniplex, the studio behind Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, and directed by Takenobu Mizuno, known for Star Wars Visions. It's a ways off, though. Ghost of Tsushima Legends isn't set to release until 2027. In the meantime, the 2020 game sequel, Ghost of Yotai, is set to arrive on PS5 later this year. Do we need a Helldivers or Horizon Zero Dawn movie?
Maybe Horizon could work, because I think it's a bit more story-driven, but like, Helldivers would have been a great fit for like Secret Level. Just give me a one-off little episode.
Yeah.
Boom.
For sure. I don't think we need any movies about games.
Given the success of the likes of Detective Pikachu, the Super Mario Brothers movie was well received. Like, I'm all for it if it's done well. I'm not all for it.
Sonic?
Yeah, exactly. And Sonic 1, 2. I haven't seen 3, but 1 and 2 were great. Great's probably a strong word. 1 or 2 were very enjoyable.
1 was great. Yeah, I'll give it great. Yeah. 2 was fun. Enjoyable, yeah. Thoroughly enjoyable.
I'm just, as long as they're making movies that don't put us back into the dark ages of adaptations, do you know what I mean? Like in terms of those horrible Resident Evil movies, which apparently are getting rebooted
this
year.
House of the Dead or whatever. Fuck, some of them are so awful.
Yeah. Because in 2025, I think we also have Resident Evil's being rebooted. There's Until Dawn movie.
They're rebooting Resident Evil again?
Yeah.
Didn't they just do that with like a Netflix series? It was fucking awful.
Oh, no, you're right. There was on Netflix and it was bad. Okay, they're trying a second reboot of the... Yeah, but that was a TV series, wasn't it? That wasn't a movie.
That was a TV series, which I think is actually just usually better for video game series.
I think so too. That's kind of a bit to my point that I don't think I've ever seen a movie adaptation of a game that I thought, oh yeah, that was necessary and was... maybe Advent Children, but like outside of that.
Even Advent Children, like you'd have to be a fan to like enjoy that though.
That's
like,
true. Yeah, the masses weren't going to go watch that.
If you were to throw in a not, like somebody who's never played Final Fantasy doesn't care about those characters, it's just fucking nonsense.
Yeah,
man.
It's so mental, yeah.
Sure.
The Helldivers 2 movie could be, I know we already have it in Starship Troopers, but I would love a modern day Starship Troopers movie. Like I'd love, because it was so funny, and Helldivers, in all of its the trailer stuff and all that kind of stuff that I watch about Helldivers 2 has been very funny. And I think if you can bring that to the pictures in like a, here's an alien invasion movie that's just a comedy with a couple of good nondescript characters or like, you know, people we can or can't care about, I'm like, that could be good. Horizon, I'd be very nervous about. I can see a Horizon movie being a Monster Hunter movie, which was really bad.
Oh, yeah, that was
Monster
bad.
Hunter with Tony Jaa, yeah. I liked it because it was campy. But, you know, I'm wired that way. I think they just give Helldivers to the studio that did Castlevania and just be like, do the same thing. Just a little bit of comedy and just gritty fucking animation of
action kind of thing. Sure. Yeah.
So you'd have it as an animated thing as opposed to live action.
Yeah, just gritty, bit of comedy and small series.
Do you know what? There is Fertile Ground there. It's just Verhoeven did such a great job at Starship Troopers. Like Starship Troopers is just an amazing movie. Like when I think about how fine a job he did of threading that needle,
it's still memed to fucking
it was meant to be a B, maybe even a C movie, but just I don't know, it got that cult following, man, and it
deservedly so as well.
Yeah, it just is really good.
Like, did you ever see the sequels?
No.
I think I might.
I didn't even know sequels existed.
So bad. They're so bad. Starship Troopers 3 was particularly awful. It's about zombies or something. It was.
See, this is what I mean in terms of this could go one of two ways. Give me a movie the quality of Starship Troopers, where you're very self-aware of what it is you're doing, and I'm in. You're very self-aware of what you're doing, and you're good at doing it. I'm like, make the movie. But if it's going to be a thing that's like too hammy, too camped up, and just too out there, I'm like, no, I'm not in for it. Like, just don't call it Helldivers.
I don't know. Starship Troopers was pretty campy, but it was like, yeah, I guess. I guess what you're describing, yeah, you nail on the head. It was self-aware. It knew what it was doing.
It was self-aware in a way where it's difficult to do because it's hard to make a movie. Like in Starship Troopers, none of the characters in the movie were in on the joke. Like that was what was entertaining about it on a meta level, was none of them got that they were part of this like
horrible,
huge, horrific, like fascistic empire that was like tormenting.
I'm
this
doing
species.
My part.
And none of them got it. And it was like kind of tongue in cheek being like, which is awesome to watch. But again, that's such a line to tread.
Probably never be done in the same
probably not
way again.
But could be. I'd love to see it succeed.
Like the true successor to Starship Trooper.
That would
you
be
know,
awesome.
I'd love that.
If they pulled
it
off, that'd make me so happy.
Other movies that I was just doing a bit of research on about that are coming out this year, and I want to see if you guys are a positive or negative. There's supposedly a Shadow of Colossus movie hasn't been canned just yet. I think it's had some sort of issues getting itself up off the ground. But a Shadow of the Colossus movie, yay or nay?
Just fighting one Colossus, maybe.
The whole movie, just one.
Well, and some build-up explanation on why, but like, you couldn't watch him fight, like, what was it, like 15?
16.
Like, 16, yeah. Fuck that.
No, I do kill the first two or three, and then do a montage of him killing the other 14 or 15, and then he fights the last one as the big thing. But the last Colossus was my least favorite in that game as well. I thought he was pretty boring. He just a big thing you climbed. There was nothing to him, really.
It was the scale, though, of him that was so awesome. It was awesome on a different scale to like any of the other monsters. Yeah. I think it could be good. I think it could be good. And I'm very precious about Shadow of the Colossus as well. Like, love that game to bits. I think it could be good. I don't think I'd want to see them like shoehorn in half the Colossi in like a montage. If you could do like a really gritty, like a Rocky style montage where he's just like, boom.
I want to see one of the scenes filmed where he's like fighting the Colossus, but the camera's like behind a fucking rock and can't see any of it. It's just like
so much camera trying to get picture from behind the rock.
Yeah. Dies off screen.
Does Resident Evil need a reboot or does it need to die?
I'm a big fan. I think, keep hammering it away until you fucking get it right.
Just
fucking get it right already.
I think so too.
So many.
I know.
I think so too, because like Resident Evil is such a campy game series as well. Like you can do it. Like you can turn that into like the movies, the first movies that came out Was it Mia? What's her name?
Mia Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yes.
Malkov.
Yeah. Her infamy is just literally from the Resident Evil, like those real campy.
Yeah, they were super like
Jovovich.
Jovovich.
She was. She just brought that kind of 2000s Matrix era, like campy coolness,
yeah,
kind of thing,
like the underworld films. That kind of vibe.
Yeah, maybe tolerable in the first movie, but the second one where she like drives a motorcycle through like the stained glass of a church and like rides up the wall. It was just like, what's going on?
There's so many issues. Like, there's the
Who the fuck is Alice? Like, I don't remember that from the games at all.
Wesker and stuff. Their characters were all in the game, right? Like they were.
Oh, like Wesker's or
yeah, but they've never
Wesker's as I used to call him when I was younger.
Yeah, they've never done him justice though. Like, no, Wesker's never looked like Wesker. Like Wesker is. He's a fucking cool bad guy.
But. He's a cool bad guy in a few of the games, but then it just gets weird. He gets weird. Well, the whole game series is weird, really.
Yeah,
it goes
fucking Final Fantasy.
I'm on your side, Chris. I think they can get it. I think they can.
Just keep hammering away. The ingredients are there. You just got
to
put it together.
Have we been away from zombie movies for long enough for us to enjoy zombie movies again?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Especially campy ones,
Yeah. Again, this might be putting you guys on the spot, but this is my last question on this article. If you wanted something to be adapted video game wise, what do you think would really do well with it?
I still want Portal.
Oh yeah.
Still want Portal. I think in some form, put it in Secret Level, put it in like
it's probably a TV series more than a movie. Good
sense of humor to that one as well.
Super great sense of humor, great writing.
Squid Game Portal, I think it's the perfect mashup.
Half-Life could be a fire series.
Half-Life would. Well, I don't.
Could be a fire series.
It could be. I don't want them to fuck it up.
You saw what they did.
I wouldn't mind another foray into Doom. First movie. We've talked about it on this podcast, but
I enjoyed that film.
I loved it. Yeah, the first person.
Yeah.
Fucking can't. Little cool,
man, it's great. And it's. I always forget his name. Fuck.
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. Always forget his name. Yeah. Carl Urban, and it was great too. I enjoyed Doom. I take another Doom movie. I think they need to go a bit more. Like what? True
they need
Doom?
To go more anime. Like they need to go more like
into hell and
crazy,
demon, like proper demon stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
What about you? Any?
I mean, I'm just gonna think of like if there's something that I really wish I could see. I'm very interested of the Horizon. Like the Horizon is a treasured series. I don't think it kind of got the recognition that it deserved for what it did, both from a new IP and a kind of a new storyline, and how amazing the game looked as well. I just don't know if it could fit the big screen, but I would be very curious. Like if they made it and it was a good film, I'd be like, yeah, fucking do the trilogy. Like do the trilogy of the games. But I don't know if the movie's just gonna be the first game, essentially. Or are they gonna in the world?
I'd assume in the world. Something about it tells me it's gonna be in the world and they're gonna let because the story is pretty beloved. I don't think they're gonna fuck with it. Kind of like Fallout. It's just like it's in that world, but it's just a different character.
I love if I were to do a Horizon movie, I would do it from a different perspective. So you as the player of the game, you find out very early on in the game, right from the get-go, that like, oh, it's not as it seems. The ancient world is not the one that we seem to be treasuring, or we praise this mountain, blah blah. That's not the case, because Aloy picks up that thing and finds out the information quite early on in the game. I would prefer if they made a movie where you're following a tribe or a group of people who throughout the whole movie are just trying to survive in this thing, and the ending is the twist where it's like, but that, you know, our present was their past type thing. I'd be like, that'd be a cool little twist. Just stay away from the Aloy story.
I don't know the plot of Horizon Zero Dawn, so I'm barely keeping up with this. Right.
I just thought of, like, I was trying to think of games that would be very well fitted for, like, keep the exact same story, just give me it in movie form. And I think Cyberpunk would be an amazing movie.
Yeah.
But you have to get Keanu. Like, you have to get Keanu.
My only thing that I'd say about that is the animated show, Edge Runner. So fucking good. I'm like,
it was good.
Do more of that stuff, I would say.
Yeah, they definitely need to do more of that too. But like, if you could give the actual story of V and Johnny Silverhand, if you did it properly, like, that would be a great movie.
It'd be a real, it could be
and
cool.
You wouldn't even have to be like a video game fan. It would just be like another
Blade Runner. Yeah, absolutely. I'll be right on which of them on that one. All right, gentlemen, our next story. This is coming from Engadget by Lawrence Bunk. And this is the Nintendo Switch 2 has been revealed. Here's everything we know so far. So as the world turns, so do console generations. The Nintendo Switch is over 7 years old, so it's due for a refresh. Nintendo Switch 2 rumors have been swirling for years, but now we have some signs of life. The company officially revealed the sequel to its most successful home console ever in a brief trailer on January 16th. The Switch 2 looks functionally very similar to the original system, albeit with a larger display, magnetic Joy-Cons, and a sleeker design. The company also reaffirmed that the upcoming console will be backwards compatible with Switch games. While the reveal did confirm some rumors and have a few interesting details for those who were paying close attention, Nintendo is still largely keeping its cards close to its chest. We'll have to wait until a special Nintendo Direct on April 2nd for all the juicy information. Annoyingly, that date is a Wednesday and not a Tuesday. I don't know. Oh, T-W-O-S-D-A-Y, as in like sequel Tuesday. A terrible joke. Terrible joke. It's not my joke. your thoughts, gentlemen, on the... Because we haven't actually had an episode where we kind of broke down anything about the Nintendo Switch 2.
Yeah, I... Because everything about it was so, like, disappointing.
Disappointing, interesting.
Yeah.
You were hoping just, for... Like,
I know we're due for an announcement, but they should have let this cook a bit better because they didn't even announce any game. They showed that, you know, there might be a Mario Kart.
I think that's
there.
Been confirmed as Mario Kart 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it, really? Like,
so
and also it's going to be able to play, like, I don't know. They mentioned some other game like Space Marine 2 or something like
they,
that.
Like, yeah, there's a couple of those.
Big
like,
fucking deal. We already have Space Marine 2.
Yeah, like Snake Eater, Delta, yeah. They reckon will be on it as well. There's a couple of the games. But I think, I get what you're saying. I wish they had held on until they had the Direct ready, but I think their hands were tied. So much was leaking. Like in the months prior, like so much, like we got like the design back in like November, December.
Yeah.
We got what the Joy-Cons were, we got what some of the games were going to be, all that kind of stuff. So I think their hands were like people were crying out being like, where the fuck is the Switch 2? And I think they were, and in fairness, it felt like a trailer that was kind of like, fuck you, here's the Switch 2, we'll talk to you later. And I kind of appreciated that from Nintendo a little bit, being like, here's the thing you already know was going to happen.
Yeah.
Does any of it, it's like, excite you, Luke?
I was very disappointed that they didn't call it the Super
Nintendo Switch. Man, yeah, I missed opportunity for sure. But I think, in fairness, I think what they were, and I would have loved if they had done that, but I think they're definitely, for the sake of buyers, like, you know, I think if you've got parents going in to buy consoles for the kids who don't know anything about it, the Xbox Series XS thing is going to be complicated. Yeah. And like, am I buying the Nintendo Switch or the Super Nintendo Switch? Is the Super Nintendo Switch just a pro version of the original Switch? But the Nintendo Switch 2 makes the most sense from a business perspective.
I get it.
I'm just disappointed.
I'd be excited to see.
You're underwhelmed.
I am underwhelmed. It's a strange move from Nintendo. It's weird that, like, you know, I'm sort of 50-50 on when Nintendo make a big innovation. Half the time it slaps, half the time it flops. And to see
is
them
every other console there's a flop.
Yeah, but like every other console is. A new innovation, like from going from the GameCube to the Wii to the Wii U to the Switch. Like, they're always trying something wild.
I guess it was just the Wii U that was a flop, right? Was the GameCube flop?
No, the GameCube wasn't a flop. No, I think the GameCube sold quite well.
The GameCube underperformed for the market. Like, it did the worst out of PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo. Especially given it was a success to Nintendo 64, which was such a strong iteration in the console.
It's a hard act to follow.
But to see them just kind of do more of the same is weirdly disappointing, like weirdly underwhelming. But the Nintendo Switch is also like my favorite console, probably out of the current console generation. So,
but a lot of people probably said the exact same thing about the Wii, and then the Wii U came around and was like, well, this isn't enough different for me to.
True.
Shit about
it. I think the parts that different is what's different about that is Nintendo Switch has been Nintendo's most successful console to date, like in terms of outperformed the Wii so much that I think, and it's been 7 years, I think it'll do well. I don't think it'll stall at all. I think it'll do very, very well. I was whelmed. I was perfectly whelmed by what I saw because of the leaks. I think I knew what it was kind of going to look like. I knew they had magnetic Joy-Cons. The thing that I'm interested in...
It has mouse Joy-Cons, oddly.
Yeah, yeah. We only saw a little tiny clip of that in the trailer as well, of the Joy-Cons being used as mouse, which I have no idea. See, and that's the thing. I'm like, that's quirky enough for me to be like, classic Nintendo. The controllers can be used as a mouse. Sure, yeah, why not? Like,
they'll, you know? And they'll do something with that. Like, yeah. That will be worked into their games.
Some Mario Party will have something fun to do with that. Sure. You could probably use that to drive your kart in Mario Kart. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
Nintendo will have it figured out. My only thing that I'm waiting for is Mario Kart 9. Great. And I think they've confirmed it because the like
Mario Kart 8 is a tough act to follow, isn't it?
Tough act to follow. And I think they did the right thing with Mario Kart 8 that I would have with Nintendo when there was no sign of the Switch 2 coming out, was just to keep putting money into that and keep getting people to buy more things for it. But it's funny. There's a lot of kind of the podcasts and shows and new things that I listen to. I think, Chris, it's very much split 50-50. People are like, I don't need a Mario Kart 9. Mario Kart 8's the perfect Mario Kart. Whereas lots of people are being like, I want to know what's next. I want more tracks. I want new.
Yeah, fair.
So
I think I want more as well.
Like, I mean, I've always loved the Mario Karts, but for some reason I still, like, in my mind, when I think of my favorite, it's the N64.
Really?
Yeah. I just loved how, like, janky and broken it was, and there were so many, like, skips and, like, cheats you could do, like jumping over walls.
Yeah.
Fucking loved it.
I'd say if I would have put a Mario Kart up there on my top, and I was a big Double Dash fan.
Double Dash is probably my second, I would say.
Yeah, Double Dash is a great Mario Kart. So I hope they have something, like, a little bit new in Mario Kart 9 that's a bit different. We had, like, underwater flying things in 8, Double Dash prior. 7 was a real... 7 on the DS was not a good Mario Kart. But, yeah, let's wait and see. But I think for me,
Diddy Kong Racing, then you got me.
Like a Crash Team Racing kind of.
No, Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh yeah. What Banjo? Was it Banjo?
Banjo was in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Some weird characters.
So was Conker and there's a bunch of
all of the Nintendo rejects. Yeah. Essentially, I'm excited. I need to know. I'm not gonna say if I think it's gonna be good or bad until April 2nd. I need to know what they have coming out and what the hell the system does. Like, you know.
Yeah.
They also need a Smash that's gonna take down Ultimate, which is.
I don't think that's necessary. Like,
you
I
think Smash think, is just that's it? That no, is the ultimate?
No, I don't think that is it, but I don't think there's the need for an appetite for it yet.
They gotta do one of two things in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's either
what they could do is Smash collectors or the anniversary edition where you get everything up until Ultimate on one console.
Oh, that'd be a nice collection to have. Yeah, to get out of the games. I think that if they do one of two things, they do a Smash Ultimate port with another character DLC pack. I don't know if the licensing would ever allow something like that to get like 5 new characters and you just play along like that. Or they reboot Smash, which was a lot of the people saying. It's like you go back to like having 10 or 12 core characters with a whole different kind of set, like move sets and all that kind of stuff. Just a fresh, fresh ballot, essentially. Which I wouldn't be averse to either. If it's like more condensed in terms of characters, but the game itself has a bit more bite to it. I don't think it needs a bit more bite. I fucking love Smash.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine the way it is. I don't think there's a ton. I don't think it's high on the priority list for Nintendo. And I don't think you'll probably see any movement on that for another year, like for another 2 years, maybe, before people really.
But they need to sell this console. So they need another big one would be Zelda.
True.
But like, there's no way they have another Zelda fucking tucked away
in their back pocket. Yeah, there's no chance. Yeah.
What would be the one thing that comes to my mind straight away is that like, obviously like a lot of games struggle to run on the Switch, the current Switch. If they could like settle that in a satisfying way where like, you know, one of the biggest, most obvious flaws in that model is that the Pokemon games, and the new Pokemon games come out, they just run like ass.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild that you can only play those Pokemon games on the Nintendo Switch, and the Nintendo Switch can't run them. Like, that's just seems like such a flaw.
That's a Game Freak problem.
Yeah, because we have Breath of the Wild exists within the Switch infrastructure and plays well. I mean, I think it's looks like, what is it? What's the next Pokemon? A and Z?
Yeah, the new Legends one.
Yeah, so I mean,
Legends Z through A.
If they come out on April 2nd and they've got, here's Mario Kart 9, here's the next 3D Mario game, and here's Pokemon A and Z, all there coming out when the game releases in November, or when the console is in November or some shit like that, I'd be like, yeah, that looks like it could be a flying success.
Well, there's a roster, but we have no mention of a new 3D Mario.
No, but they wouldn't mention it. So that's what I mean. We've no mention, and they didn't even mention Mario Kart 9. That was just a pure little tease they put in. So I think we'll get those on April 2nd. I'm interested to see what they do on April 2nd.
I'm actually not aware where it is. April
Nintendo Direct. There's a specific Switch 2 Nintendo Direct taking place on April 2nd.
Okay.
That will announce everything, like, I'm sure what the thing is capable of, what games we can expect, and a release date and a price, I think is they'll cover.
That's cool. Yeah, I look forward to that.
I'll wait and see. This next one is coming from Video Games Chronicle, and this is by Andy Robinson. EA lost $6 billion in market value following FC25 and Dragon Age underperformance. So on Wednesday, EA warned the market value, or EA warned the market value it now expects a decline in its live service revenue for its current fiscal year after previously forecasting growth. Primarily, the decline was attributed to an FC25 slowdown during the Christmas period. In addition, EA said that the BioWare RPG Dragon Age The Veilguard released in October has missed its expectations by around 50%, with 1.5 million players reached. By Thursday, the publisher had lost $6 billion from its market value of $37.3 billion following the pre-earnings news. EA FC generates around about $2 billion annually, Reuters reports, with around $800 million of that made up by Ultimate Team. Quote, Ultimate Team has come to be viewed as a near Swiss clock of interactive media bookings growth. If it is stagnant, it puts enormous pressure on EA to fill the void, end quote, said Moffat. Analysis. I've never heard of them before. EA Sports FC 25 received the franchise's most significant mid-season gameplay overhaul to date in January, which included some of the most sought-after community requests, according to EA. Dragon Age: The Veilguard was released in October for PS5, Xbox Series X, and X, and PC. Earlier this month, the game's director, Corny Bush, confirmed she was leaving BioWare for an offer she, quote, couldn't turn down. FC 25 not performing. I am surprised.
Yeah, there's I'm quite surprised as well, because it's like a really reliable franchise for printing money, and also they've all their deals made with all the different clubs around the world to get themselves independent from FIFA for about a year now. Everything is set up for success and it's underperforming. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I know that there are kind of different versions of the game.
I wonder if it was the rebrand.
So that was my thing. Does the fact that it's FC now, did FIFA as a namesake really actually have a lot to do with
like
its
maybe
success?
People just didn't know, like they were still like, maybe they're still out there sitting like, when's the next FIFA coming out? Not realizing that.
Could you
it's
imagine?
FC, like I think like there's got to be somebody out there that
there's got to be some people out there who
just
love
never
playing
looks at the news. Yeah,
loves like, football games but has no idea what goes on in the industry. It's just like, yeah, where the fuck's FIFA 2024 and 2025?
Yeah, for sure. It's still market leader, to be fair. Like whatever, I can't remember what PES rebranded to, but it's still smashing whatever the modern PES is, which is a free-to-play game as well.
Yikes.
And FIFA's still like wiping the floor there, I'm pretty sure, in terms of like concurrent players.
Manchester United or whatever it was when the old PES with the loss of the licenses.
Before they got the licenses, yeah. It could very much be a branding issue. I know there's also different versions of it on different consoles, like the PS4... version and the Xbox One version of it and the Nintendo Switch version of it are seemingly feel a lot more arcadey and perform a lot more differently than the current gen console versions of the same game.
Interesting.
The very different feels.
I mean, that's pretty common though.
Sure.
Diablo. Diablo games have always been notorious for that.
Unless you're Witcher, in which case, do not play that game on the Switch.
Do not play it on
Do not play The Witcher 3 on the Switch, ever. I feel a bit... I mean, EA would probably be one of those companies I've got the biggest bone to pick with in terms of like damaging really good developers. BioWare being, I suppose, maybe top of the gripe list I have with them. It's like what it was to what it is now. I am a bit sorry that Dragon Age Veilguard wasn't the success they wanted to be, because from all perspectives, I looked at the trailers and stuff like that and said, although Dragon Age wasn't going to appeal to me the way it used to back when I was in college playing the previous one, I still thought it looked good.
They strayed way too far from
what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a pity, because like from all that I saw, I was, this looks good. I mean, it doesn't interest me, but looks good. But I guess it wasn't good enough.
No, there was very, very, very mixed reviews in terms of like, I had heard a lot of bad things about it, but then I was surprised to like look into it and see how many like really high review scores there were amidst all the people who are like very, very
I think it's
of it.
Yeah,
well,
it's,
that's the thing, like it was kind of hard to filter through, because there was obviously it got review bombed by like super far right, like the anti-woke just hated it, and then it also got like kind of bumped up by the people that were just like defend that no matter what. So it was kind of hard to find the middle ground. It was just like, all right,
my online like consumption thing, I definitely don't skew in on the anti-woke side of the line. I'm quite the opposite, but a lot of the like actual woke scolds and like the hard lefties also fucking hated it, because
yeah that's the thing, that's where it was trying to tough to find the balance. Like, oh, these people are even saying like this is straight up kind of pandering.
Yeah, shitty representation for trans characters and that kind of thing was a common criticism.
Oh, well, this is probably a really fucking loaded question. To put on a news episode, but
are
do
trans people
No. Should video games kind of stray out of that a little bit? I wouldn't necessarily call it pandering in general. I mean, obviously, Dragon Age might have felt like it was pandering a little bit, but do they need to just kind of take a step back?
I think video game just needs to. I don't think anything should be forced into the story. Like, the story should be the story. Like, you shouldn't. Shouldn't really be pulled in any direction for any outside reason. Well, I'm trying to think of the word here. External forces.
External forces, yeah.
Yeah. It should just be like, you should just have a vision for what you want to make and you make it. Like, whether that is on, you know, one side or the
DEI
other side.
DEI be damned.
DEI be damned.
No, No.
It's tough. Yeah. It's definitely not what I'm saying. It's just like...
No. I'm 100% with you, Chris. I think if you have a vision that's well executed...
Like me and Luke last night came up with a wonderful idea for a game, Hatecraft.
Yeah. It's like a Lovecraftian world mythos. But like the main character is like a black trans, like
black Irish trans, like everything.
Just loaded
everything
in.
H.P. Lovecraft would have hated.
Yeah. Call it Hatecraft. There was going to be a dating sim or something.
Yeah, it was going to be a dating sim. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
As long as you guys have the vision. That's what I mean. Yeah. Like,
and we just stick to it.
Like, that is the vision. It's
executed as best as you can. Yeah. And shoehorning the other aspects into video games probably shouldn't. Well, yeah, it shouldn't happen. Maybe lots of people probably disagree with me with that, saying it should happen because it should all be. Because it's tough. It's a lot of question, man. I probably shouldn't have introduced that into this episode.
No, I mean, you can't say like every game has to be inclusive to everyone. Like, look at like what just released, Hello Kitty Island Adventure. That's not exclusive, or that's not inclusive to us. You know, nearly 40-year-old men. Like, why can't we? Like, why can't it be made for us?
Well, I thought Hello Kitty Wild Adventure was made for me.
Okay, well, fair enough.
No, I would.
In fairness, I would play it though, just because of the South Park reference. But
this is an interesting one I'll kind of, because we had it on the news. How far towing the line or past the line do you reckon GTA 6 goes?
I'm really interested to see how that actually.
I think
I don't know anything about the story or what the characters.
There's
are
definitely going
to
be some trans characters in it. And I think they're also going to be like super offensive and like, I mean, they're going to have the typical like racism and gang feuds. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think they're going to waver much.
Okay.
I do think they are going to introduce like, you know, what is going on in the current world, but it'll still be the same old GTA we love.
I would love to be wrong with this, but I think they are going to tone it down a lot. I think they're going to play.
You think you're, oh,
I think
okay,
they're going right. to, I think they're going to tone it down. I don't think they want the smoke. I think they've too much money on the line. I don't think they're going to lean into...
The usual.
Yeah, the way they kind of poke fun. Like, if you go back now and listen to GTA 5, like, radio stations and the way they parody the right wing, they parody, like, hippies and, like, lefties and stuff like that. It's really funny, but it's very, like... It's very cutting stereotypes
of,
like...
The world has changed for that kind of stuff drastically in 12 years.
Yeah,
like, hugely.
It's just people are very affected by like issues on all sides of the political spectrum now, like very directly.
Yeah, see, that's why a part of me thinks that instead of
a stick of dynamite in that box,
they're going to insult. It's like South Park, like no one is
safe.
If you insult everybody, you're not.
Nobody
really,
can be offended.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody can be.
Exactly.
I'd love to be wrong about it, especially if they did it, again, if they did it right, like if they towed the line properly, which I feel like they have done in the past. But I think they tone it down. I really think they tone it down. I think it's too much money on the line.
Yeah, as you said, like billions on the line, essentially.
Because Dragon Age Veilguard, to talk about what we were just talking about, like that suffered financially because of the backlash from far right and far left communities. Like financially, it really suffered and was like an obvious win for EA and an obvious win for the series because it looked gorgeous. Like it was. Yeah.
Don't worry, fellas. I'll get us off that highly charged topic onto one that I was delighted to put in this week's episode. And this is about the VGHF, which is the Video Game History Foundation, library opens in early access. So this is by Phil Salvador, and it comes from the Video Game History Foundation website itself. So today, which is January 30th, is when this article was made. Today, the Video Game History Foundation launches early access to its digital archive of video game history research materials, available now at library.gamehistory.org. Ever since we started in 2017, the Video Game History Foundation has been building a digital library to help the study of video game history. We've been collecting development documents, behind-the-scenes content, rare video game publications and catalogs, magazines, memorabilia, ephemera?
Oh, ephemera.
Ephemera, thank you. God, I got absolutely stuck in that. And more. After years of cataloging, processing, and digitizing our collections, we're ready to open our virtual doors to the public for the first time. So our collection, our digital library platform, launches with access to a curated selection of materials from our library, including never-before-seen game development materials, artwork, press kits, and promotional materials from iconic video games, over 1,500 full text-searchable out-of-print video game magazines, including game industry trade magazines, rarely made available to the public. Learn how games were made. VGHF works with the game development community to preserve design documents, artwork, video footage, correspondence, and other unique items from behind the scenes of game production. Now we're opening these resources for you, and you can discover for yourself how games were made and sold. The highlight of our launch collection is the Mark Filtman Papers. Mark is a retired game producer who worked at companies like Konami, Acclaim, Midway, and Mindscape in the 90s and 2000s. He and his family graciously invited the Video Game History Foundation to his home and allowed us to digitize and share the mountains of paperwork and digital file backups he's kept in his basement for over two decades. And if you don't know the games he worked on, and you probably know a few, his papers are an incredible record of the business of video game production and marketing. Our library also premieres with over 100 hours of footage from the production of the Myst series by developer Cyan, including the original FMV filming footage for Myst and Riven, the sequel to Myst, and hours of never-before-seen interviews with the Cyan team. We digitized these in support of the upcoming film, The Myst Documentary. Cyan has been unbelievably supportive of our mission and has given us unprecedented access to their internal archives to share these videos with you. The website goes on to talk about its work with the community to get more bits and bobs onto its archive, but I love it. I love that we're saving all of these things that would otherwise just be lost to the ether for good.
Yeah, it's interesting. The first place my brain went to that was with like was thinking about, oh, how many ISO files of video games are they preserving? You know, like people like Vimslayer and stuff like that. You can, if you wanted to,
was it Vim's Cave or whatever?
Yeah, if you wanted to download like dubious copies of like Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah, yeah.
Final Fantasy VIII is one of the ones that never works. But Final Fantasy VII or Metal Gear Solid or whatever, there's lots of places that host those under the onus of being video game historians. So that's kind of where I thought it was going.
Okay, but it seems a bit more legit and a bit kind of out of the video games
legit,
themselves, but just more on the historical side of video
and the
games.
Production and stuff like that. It does sound really interesting to kind of know. Kind of know what the marketing tactics would have been back in like the 90s and 2000s, because it was very, of course, video games have historically been very like boy coded.
Yeah,
And violence coded.
Duke Nukem and all that kind of stuff back in the
Doom.
Day.
Actually, John Romero is pretty closely involved with something like this. Oh, yeah. Like he has like archives of his own old code, like written on paper and stuff that he was like, I think, donating to some sort of idea like this, like game preservation or like historical preservation. I think it was him. I can't remember.
The thing I would be most excited about, I haven't had a chance to actually go on and take a look myself, but it's the gaming magazines. I'd really love to kind of just
God,
flip
so
back through.
Awful, man.
I love them. Awful. As a kid growing up, I loved game magazines.
Yeah,
man.
I did, but looking back, they're like, they're corny as fuck. And did you ever look like Nintendo Powers with like the scratch and sniffs and shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Ugh.
No.
They were so bad, man.
But see, awful. I mean, I know, like, yeah, but like lots of stuff that we did from like the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s is quite cringeworthy. But like, I mean, I think one of my
maybe that's what I'm thinking of, just 90s cringe.
Yeah. Which, but it was there, it happened, and I'd love for it to be preserved. Like, the two greatest memories I have of looking at video game magazines were when my brothers, because they would always have, they had like subscriptions to, I can't remember which video game magazine it was, and we always used to go to Cost Cutters, which I think was called McHugh's before that, but we went to McHugh's up opposite DCU. It's that Eurospar now, but it was a newsagent beforehand, and you could go in, and we got like, I got the Dandy, the Beano, my brothers got like video game magazines. We went in every week to collect their subscription, and they had a video game magazine, and that was the first time I saw Smash Brothers, like stills of Smash Brothers, like Kirby, Fox, Pikachu, and Mario fighting on the Corneria. I was like, what the fuck is this? And the first time I saw any images for Kingdom Hearts was through the game magazine that my brother's handed me and said, oh, I think you might like this. And it had like a still of Cloud in the Hades Coliseum as well as Sora with Donald and Goofy. And I was like, what is this? And I think that kind of the awe of those kind of things is lost because of how we consume information nowadays. With the internet, everything's just kind of flooded at you all the time. Whereas you used to get things in such piecemeal back then that everything was like, Jesus Christ, this is amazing. So I'd love to see if I could find a few magazines. And I don't know, because this is obviously American maybe. So I don't know if they'd have the kind of magazines that we would have had in Europe. But I'd love to kind of see if there was any of the old stuff that I would recognize, like, you know.
For sure. There was as well, there was an element of it that was, there was so much... In terms of the page layouts and the page spreads, there was so much like passion and care and attention to detail put into these franchises that you love so much. If you flick back through those magazines now, you're just like, wow, they cared so much about this thing.
Yeah,
it was a way for sure. It was a way for like having, because video games were a pretty niche interest when we were kids. But it was like a very much a way of feeling seen in your sort of passion and the thing that you cared about so much to see.
I love it because we even did I don't know if you remember in TY in transition year, like we like part of our thing was to come up with like a magazine or a newspaper thing. And we did a magazine and it was like a real cover all. Like I did like a political piece or an interest piece on like graffiti in the area, like Bugs and Capone used to be around here. And we did a video game section, like a spread on video games and stuff like that, because I was so... And even then, by transition year, those kind of were going out of vogue. Like, video game magazines weren't really the thing.
Well, magazines in general. We got the internet now.
Yeah.
There's no reason to be printing those.
I do miss them, though. I do miss them. But great, we have them all digitized now, so we don't have to print them. They're all there. I'm delighted. Gentlemen, that's all I have for today's episode. But in the post-show, we're covering... Let me bring up my little script here. We're covering something to do with Dr. Disrespect. The Sega XD brain rental.
Okay, all right. Well,
and PlayStation cancelling... God of War remake? Something we probably didn't need.
Like,
yeah.
The original God of War?
Oh, no. Recent 2018 God of War.
Good. Cancel it. Bench it for another fucking 10, 20 years, man. We don't need it anytime soon.
It's all coming to our post show at patreon.com/thegiftofgaming. Check it out for the cost of a coffee a month. It's all there. Luke, thank you so much for joining me for the main show. Chris, thank you so much for joining me for the main show. And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.